Yeah. Uh-huh. Listen up. Yeah. I can see you're new to this. You ain't got no job. You ain't got no experience. You're entry level. You ain't got no qualifications, baby. You're entry level. Your entry level. Your entry level, baby. Your entry level. Ooh, yeah.
Entry level. Interested in buying Bitcoin but don't know where to start? Start earning Bitcoin today at BlockFi.com/Brooks and get a bonus of $25 in crypto after your first purchase. That's BlockFi.com/Brooks for $25 in crypto bonus after you make your first qualifying purchase with the credit card. Hey, welcome to this week's episode of Entry Level. I'm at his house. He's holding his child. It's Nick Turner.
Just call me daddy.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, you're a dad.
Yeah, but call me daddy. Do you know what I mean?
No.
I want you to call me daddy.
All right, daddy. You got it. Whatever, man. Whatever you need. No.
Whatever
daddy needs. Whatever daddy needs. Yeah. Okay. Hey, thanks for doing the podcast, daddy.
You got it, son.
So it's Halloween, currently Halloween. Mm-hmm. Spooky, scary.
Men becoming, fuck.
It's boys becoming men. Of course, saying it right. Men becoming wolves or something like that.
Boys becoming men.
Men becoming wolves. Yes, it's very funny.
Very funny.
Childish Gambino. And
his first number one hit.
It's a great hit. So last Halloween, you, me, and your wife, and not your child, watched Hocus Pocus. And we had a nice time.
Yeah.
And then we watched A Nightmare Before Christmas after that. And you and I heckled the whole movie.
That's not a good movie.
It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Yeah. And you guys really like Hocus Pocus. So, you know, I'm not going to shit on it.
What's wrong with Hocus Pocus?
I don't know. Did I like it?
I love Hocus Pocus. I watched it this morning, dude.
Lyra likes it too much.
Lyra does like it too much.
You watched it this morning and Lyra likes it too much? it's your alarm clock? Just Hocus Pocus starts playing every day?
I was hungover. It's Halloween. I don't like spooky movies.
What's your favorite part about it?
I talked about it, I think, last week.
On this show?
Yeah, because Summer's been doing the intros.
Well, you know I didn't listen to that. Summer's been doing the intros. Have you been getting any mail about Summer doing the intros? I mean, people must be pissed.
Summer is incredible.
It's like Yoko Ono coming in with like, John, I have some new songs to record.
How dare you?
What? No, she broke up
the
band.
You're attacking Summer.
Yes, I'm attacking Summer. You kind of is just coming from my job. This is L.A., baby. I just was going to
say. You had a child. You're busier than normal.
All right.
And yeah. I hang out with my girlfriend all of the time. Okay.
What if? I'm not talking to you anymore.
Okay, all right. Yeah, it's just like, you know, this would be easier than figuring out when Nick's baby's sleeping.
Okay.
So my favorite part of Hocus Pocus, they write when I forget her name, the really funny actress. It's not Bette Midler, or Sarah Michelle. What is it?
Kathy Najimy.
Kathy Najimy rides a vacuum, and I talked about it last week. As like a 10-year-old.
Oh, you talked about it last week.
Yeah, as a 10-year-old, I was like, you can't beat this. This is the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Wow. Okay. Can I ask you this question? Mm-hmm. What do you enjoy more? When she rides the vacuum or when Fish plays the vacuum? Because very famously in their concerts, one of them, I'm just going to say Trey because he's the name I can remember, mm-hmm. plays the vacuum. And they love, it's so funny. It's so funny. I mean, that's bare naked ladies level funny.
Is Fish the band that got stuck on platforms like over New Year's, like last year? Like one band, they were on platforms and they started going wild.
What does that mean, platforms?
They were like on, I'm pretty sure this was Fish. they were doing their New Year's concert and they were all like on like, you know, on American Gladiators, the joust, like those things.
Yeah, yeah.
So they were each on one of those.
Oh, I see.
And they got stuck on them.
That's really
funny. They stopped working. And that's they were just like way high up in the air. They had to like crawl off it.
That's great, man. Yeah. I love it when your art gets too big for you. And you're like, what have I done?
It's incredible. So what did your child, Otis, go as for Halloween?
Oh, he went.
What'd you shove him into?
He went in an all-white ensemble. And he went as a white little Otis.
White little Otis?
Yeah, but say it faster.
White Lotus. White Lotus. Oh, yeah. Congrats.
Yeah.
Good job.
More wordplay than putting crap on my kid.
Yeah. No, you stuffed him.
Yeah,
you
that was Lyra's joke, too, and I want everyone to know that because she's probably listening from the other room.
Yeah, she is. She's telling us what the lady's name is in her favorite movie, Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, but she said Najimi. get over yourself, Lyra.
Okay. So what did you go as? Did you go as anything?
Oh, yeah, I went as an extra. Well, she really crammed us into a full
family. You did a uniform. Family
yeah, so
uniform?
This is what she did. She went as Jennifer Coolidge.
Okay.
As, you know, the grieving on the boat with the ashes.
Wow, this is a lot. So I cannot wait. Let me guess what you went as, okay?
Yeah, well.
A person who works there?
Yeah, so the shirt I'm wearing is a big tip. I made this shirt. It says pool shirt for the show I did this week.
Okay.
I have a joke about whatever, wear a shirt in the pool. And it's this shirt. So when people ask me why I'm wearing my shirt in the pool, I'm like, where else would I wear this shirt? Anyway,
it's very
funny.
That's very funny.
Very funny.
I have I talked about my old tattoo bit. I talk about it's fun wearing a shirt in public pools.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So here's the thing. I've just decided I wore a swimsuit, this shirt, I wore a beach towel, some flip-flops, and I went as an extra from White Lotus that didn't know he was going to be put in a pool scene. So before that day, he went and had a shirt made that said pool shirt, and then he got Mike White's approval to wear it in the pool.
Anytime... You have to, it takes that long to explain a costume. I'm out. It took so long for you to explain what that costume
was. Yeah. Well, I didn't really give a shit too hardcore. I was busy. You know, when I see people with elaborate, great costumes, I think, well, congrats on not having anything to do this month.
I went to Goodwill. I was the Queen of England. It was great.
That's fun. Yeah, yeah. Goodwill do it.
Yeah, $18.
Lyra and I were wondering, you know, you had such a great outfit. Why didn't you get some shoes?
Well, I thought it was funnier to wear whatever the shoes are.
Yeah, well,
Converse.
Anytime someone says they thought it was funnier to do the wrong thing, I'm out.
Okay, all
that's
right.
Me to you.
So you guys are looking at my Instagram and you're attacking me when I'm not here.
No, you sent me a fucking photo to my phone, dude. I'm not searching the internet looking for Brooks Whelan content.
I gotta be honest with you. Fucking asshole. All right. Okay. Well, we have a great fun conversation with Dave Ross.
Ross, the man. He's the really best. Helped me out this week.
He's great. Nick had to do stand up.
Yeah,
again.
He made me he gave me an hour show at Stories. Very nice.
Awesome. Yeah. I also, we talk a little bit about it, but I took mushrooms on Friday and went to the Greek and I had, I freaked out.
Freak at the Greek.
Mm-hmm, freak at the Greek. So I asked people to send in their Halloween stories at injurylevelwithbrooksbeeland@gmail.com. And this is, I won't say their name because they end it with, please keep me anonymous. Bye.
Oh God.
But it's got it all. It's Halloween and mushrooms. She says, hi Brooks. A few years ago for Halloween week, this story takes a lot of twists and turns.
Oh my God.
A few years ago for Halloween weekend, my neighbor threw a party and made mushroom tea.
Okay.
A few days later, on actual Halloween, that's today, my husband and I are invited over to hang out and drink the leftovers. Mm-hmm. Incredible. All is fun and good. The trees are beautiful. Things are nice. We are wearing wigs. Wigs and mushrooms, very fun. Husband included. She says, then, big surprise... Things start to get... I'm going to need
you... Hey, Siri, call Lyra Smith.
What? Your baby is being so loud.
I know. Well, you know, the baby was here before we started. Hey, Lyra.
Will you,
can you do me a favor and take the baby?
Get rid of it. Otis is ruining the intro entry level. Okay.
Thank
so, we're trying to talk about mushrooms.
Yeah, sorry, everybody who had to be reminded of life.
Okay. So, they're there. They're eating. They're drinking the mushroom tea. They're in Wicks. She goes, our very kind old lady neighbor comes over to gift us with a bag full of white bread and milk. All right. She said, pretty weird gift, but even weirder is looking into the deep, dark wrinkles of a 4-foot-something, 9-year-old woman wearing color-coordinated tracksuit. She tells all of us
the Squid
girls,
Game outfit.
Yeah, she's wearing a Squid Game, to have a nice night. From there, we never really recovered. It took us about an hour to figure out how to order a pizza. I like that. My husband made the mistake.
Why are you ordering pizza? You got bread and milk.
You know what? Good.
Make a
good
pizza.
Point. Make a pizza. My husband
cheese right there.
Yeah. My milk. Husband made the mistake of looking in the mirror and our moods shifted. So we decided to go home. I was having a real bad time. I just wanted to sleep now. But when I closed my eyes, I still saw things. My solution for this? Take a shower and shave my head whilst crying.
Oh, my God. What are you, on meth? That's not a mushroom activity. I may have done meth once, what? And I definitely gave myself a haircut.
I talk about... In my Dave Ross interview, I talk about the one time I did meth. Yeah.
It's so funny. It's like, drugs are so fun. And then, like, everyone I know did meth once.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck was that, man?
Dude, it was awful.
It's like 8 in the morning. I'm, yeah, like, just looking for bridges to go under to search for more.
Yeah, I will say this. Meth, when I was on it, didn't know I was on it. First, everyone also does,
yeah,
meth on,
yeah,
accident.
Sure. Well, it's like, you want to do some cocaine? You shouldn't have done that much.
That's my joke was, I you'll hear it in the interview. I talk about it.
I can't wait. I'm waiting for your album. You'll text it to me.
Fuck you. She says, so she shaves her head, uh-huh, on mushrooms. This is the craziest.
That's crazy. I've never heard that.
Me neither, dude.
I was like, I was wondering why she didn't want to say her name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sometime shortly after, my neighbor's sober husband shows up with the pizza. My husband and I both have our heads shaved. They both shaved
what
their
heads. What the fuck?
They both shaved their heads.
Well, I want to know how long their hair was.
Oh, it's incredible. She said, we look insane. We also failed to consider that it's Halloween night and children in costumes are coming to the door. So you're bald on mushrooms and ghouls are coming.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Which is the last thing we need to see. So we make our neighbor. So she has her neighbor start answering the door for us. She said, the rest of the night is hazy. But that's the story of the first and last time I did mushrooms. Please keep me anonymous. Bye. We think you did meth.
That's really funny. Yeah, you just drank a tea. You have no fucking clue.
You
what
drank
was in this.
Methamphetamine.
That is, yeah. Wow. I need more.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fun Halloween story. It's crazy. I mean, email in more Halloween stories if you have them. These are very fun. I mean,
but I love it. You know, it's like at least that day, no one thought you were weird.
Right.
They're like, wow, great costume.
Mm-hmm. Dude, so when I took mushrooms, I went to the Greek Friday. Everybody was dressed up. It was a lot.
Yeah.
Because you're tripping and everyone's dressed up like crazy people. It's not fun.
Yeah, but you know, how much did you eat?
I am a lightweight, dude. I ate a stem, a cap, and a stem, and I was on the moon.
I have no idea what that means.
It means I ate a mushroom and a half.
Yeah, but, you know, a mushroom could be this big, could be this big.
It wasn't a lot. So I would say, like, I had, like, an eighth of mushrooms.
Yeah.
I ate 1/8 of the eighth of mushrooms. So I had.
Oh, wow.
Like, 1/64 of an amount
of
mushrooms.
And you freaked out.
Yeah.
Nerd alert.
100% nerd alert.
You should be in a threesome with that bald couple. You all freak out the same amount.
Email entry level at brooksbeamer@gmail.com if you want to have threesomes on mushrooms and shave our heads.
Oh, God. You'd all get stabbed somehow.
Nick.
Yes. Have I ever had a threesome on mushrooms?
Yeah.
Not on mushrooms.
Okay. Good for you. I think that's where we're going to end this intro.
Oh, okay.
We had a nice
That's
time.
Too quick. I feel like we didn't do a good job.
We didn't, but I'm like, where do we go from here? More Halloween stories? What's the best Halloween costume you ever wore?
Oh, Michael Jordan.
When did you go? Blackface? Did
we talk about this? This is why I think I'm a great guy.
Oh, fuck.
Because like,
I don't,
like 20 years ago, I went as Michael Jordan and I didn't go in blackface.
Okay.
And that's how I know, like, I get it.
So in 2001,
yeah,
you decided.
I mean, literally exactly 2001, I did. That was the year. I went in blackface.
Wait, you went not
in blackface. Not in blackface. I went black head. I wore a black bald cap. Mm-hmm. And I just stuck my tongue out a lot, you know?
I don't know.
You don't know? Black ball cap is also bad.
I don't know. Kevin Barnett had the best Halloween joke. He talked about how being black really limits your ability to. He's like,
yes.
Why? He's like, I'm tired of being Blade.
Yeah.
He's like, why do I got to be Black Wolverine? Can I just be Wolverine?
Yeah, that's really
yeah. Because then he talked about how he bought Wolverine a fucking knuckle claws, and he had to blackface the knuckles.
Hilarious.
He's the best. I miss him. Yeah. All right.
Well, there you hear it, folks. From Kevin Barnett to your ears, it wasn't racist what I did.
Yep. Nope. Yeah. Exactly. And Kevin was very good.
Would he be my friend if I was some racist? You know. There you go, folks.
Oh, man. All right, guys. Enjoy this episode with Dave Ross. It's a fun conversation. We get to one job, but we mostly just talk about comedy, and it's a treat. Subscribe to Patreon.
What's the job? Can you tell us? Can you tell us? Maybe, I don't know. I know that there's a legion of listeners who are about to turn this off. So
you are such an asshole. I'll tell you.
No, because they're sad Summer's not here.
Exactly. I'll tell you. I'll give you the initials of the fast food chain. And if you can guess it.
Oh, okay. I love it. I love a game. Why don't we play more games on
this? I'm going to give you the initials of a fast
food
chain.
Oh, okay. I love this.
If you can guess it.
Yes.
BK.
All right.
Well, if you're like me, you wish you got into Bitcoin sooner. We goofed, guys. If we're not in it, we should get in it. BlockFi has the world's first Bitcoin rewards credit card, so you can earn Bitcoin on all qualifying purchases. Grow your Bitcoin portfolio when you buy your groceries, pay your bills, or fill up at the gas station. That's a lot. That's like $80 for the Subaru. It's so much money. I should get some Bitcoin rewards for that. BlockFi is a leader in crypto and was named to Forbes FinTech 50 list in 2021. That's a great list. Right now, our listeners can get a bonus of $25 in crypto after you make your first purchase with the credit card. When you sign up at BlockFi.com/Brooks, that's $25 bonus in crypto deposited right into your account after you make your first purchase. But you have to use my URL, BlockFi.com/Brooks. Start earning Bitcoin back on all your qualifying purchases today. BlockFi.com/Brooks. Not all will be eligible. Geographic, regulatory, and underwriting restrictions apply. Fees and terms are subject to change. Additional terms of service at BlockFi.com. BlockFi is a financial technology company. Banking services provided by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Hey, welcome to this week's episode of Entry Level. I'm excited. He's here. We're on the front lawn. Dave Ross.
Hey, what's up, dude?
Nothing.
Nothing.
We were just talking.
Then we end the episode.
Yeah. I was just explaining to you how I'm fiercely hungover from Halloween.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's not even in today's Halloween.
Today is Halloween. Yes. I told Summer this morning, I go, happy Halloween. She's like, no.
Yeah.
We did it yesterday.
It's November 1st now.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's funny.
So my girlfriend saw me bomb in a wig last night.
Oh, wow.
That's the lowest.
And you're
can
still
get.
Together.
Well, it's rockier.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll call you in a week.
It's like a thing where I was just like, she saw me bomb in a dress with a wig on.
Yes, dude.
All of the things.
When'd you put your costume on?
Come on. No, I liked it.
Thanks, bud.
I was like, yesterday.
I was trying to say it wasn't on yet.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And then I realized that I delivered the joke very poorly.
You did what I did last night on stage.
Oh, yeah.
I delivered the joke poorly. Yeah.
The worst part was it was Comedy Garage, and like, you know, it was late, we're all drunk.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was basically doing comedy for friends.
Sure.
And I told Paul Dinky, let's all do short sets, 5 minutes. I guarantee I did 20.
Wow, of course. Were you closing?
No.
Well, I'm just asking because it would be particularly funny to me. You were like, let's all do five. And then like seven people do five, and then you run the light.
Well, it's like the thing where it's like you're eating it.
Yeah.
And you're like, I got to leave on a laugh.
Yeah.
And it's like, buddy, they're not coming.
It's not going to happen. The only way to bomb less is to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People will respect that.
Right.
I lost. Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm so sorry. I did so bad. I went and bought beer for the audience afterwards.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I was like,
dude,
I got beer. If anybody wants it, I fucked up. I was like,
that's so funny, dude.
Yeah.
Imagine if anything else in life were like that. Mm-hmm. Like if in a football game, one team just like wouldn't stop being on the field until they even had a shot at a touchdown. Yeah. Look, I don't need to win. I just need you to know that I know how to play.
Yeah, I gotta catch a ball.
Come on.
You're not gonna catch a ball, man. And
you guys don't even have to come out. Just let us do one down.
Yeah. Incredible. Dave, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, man. I'm fine. I'm feeling...
I saw you be very, very funny the other day at that new venue.
Yeah. The Elysian.
The Elysian, yeah.
Yeah, that place is great.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I naturally was off-putting to the lady who runs it.
Oh, sure. Yeah. In what way?
I was like, hey, this place is great. She's like, oh, yeah. I was like, where did you get to Los Angeles? She's like, oh, I'm from... I moved here from Philly. I was like, Philly fucking sucks.
Oh, boy.
She didn't feel that way.
Sure.
Yeah. I was like, why do I open
right
that?
Away? Man, I did that once. When I was young in comedy, like, the first thing... The first thing I sold, the first show I sold with like a few writing partners, but the first
was
thing
it women?
We sold, yeah, with my old sketch group. Women.
Okay, and we'll get to this because I have I sold a TV show to IFC
at
the same time, and I found, okay, but go ahead.
So I was, you know, our sketch group, I would say back then collectively.
Women was incredible.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. I still am very proud of it.
Yeah.
But also, we started Women when I was a year into stand up. Mm-hmm. And so the sketch group collectively, we were great. And the rest of us individually were just fucking novices. We were
not
babies,
good at comedy,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And also, sort of, I think me more than even the other three guys felt very like, I don't know what the hell the industry is. I feel overwhelmed. I don't even know what networking or anything is, right? So anyway, I just felt like very much a baby in this world where I had like sold a show, and they paired us with so we sold it to IFC, and then they paired us with BJ Porter as a head writer,
a showrunner,
showrunner, head writer, and BJ Porter. You know,
I don't know BJ Porter.
He's the other half of Comedy Death Ray with Scott Aukerman, right. And then they went separate ways, and that's why I changed to Bang Bang. And they're still friends and shit, and he wrote on the show and stuff. Yeah. But and then he like he's been the head writer of so many fucking shows, and he wrote for Mr. Show and
they're
shit.
They're basically
like,
hey, come babysit these dudes.
Yeah,
you know, help them. These guys have an idea, but they don't know how to write TV yet.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And in the second or third meeting with this dude who's so kind, and he's having us write at his apartment with his wife in Studio City. I don't even remember how it came up.
I can't wait for what
you guys he was like, where do you guys live? And I was like, oh, I live in Echo Park. And he's like, you like it there? And I was like, yeah, I like it there. Anywhere but the Valley. I fucking hate the Valley.
You're
and
he goes, in the Valley.
You're in the Valley.
Yeah.
and I was like, and the rest of the guys looked at me like, what are you doing?
Why? Yeah,
this guy is so kind.
Yeah.
And I had to backpedal in this intense way. I almost threw up on his table, you know? I'm like panicking. I was like, no, you know, like, fuck me though, you know? God, damn it.
Yeah, no, I guess I suck, yeah.
And the other thing is that I didn't even, and I feel like this happens to me a lot with the social awkwardness of Hollywood in general. I didn't even mean that. Mm-hmm. Studio City's great.
No, we just like...
You just talk because you're worried that if there's silence that something is wrong.
Basically, you just say something so you hope that they think, basically you're just saying, I'm cool.
Yeah, right.
But you're not.
You're not.
We're not.
You know what's cool? Shutting up.
Yeah.
Just being quiet.
Yeah.
Dude, there's an episode of The Drew Carey Show, which...
I can't wait.
People don't talk about enough.
Drew Carey Show...
It's a great show.
...was a juggernaut.
Dude. And the entire cast, it was great. There was a whole episode of the show about how Colin Mochrie decides that he's not going to talk anymore. And everyone loves him. Everyone just starts everyone hated him. And then he's like, I'm just not going to talk. I think it's bad for me to talk. And then he becomes everyone's best friend and he gets a raise and all this shit. And I think about it all the time. Like, all my panic bullshit, everything, all the ways that my brain goes haywire,
right,
tell me to talk. And it's never correct. You should always shut up.
Yes. I took mushrooms on Friday and walked up to the Greek. And there's this band called Jungle Plane, and they're not my cup of tea. But it was my girlfriend's brother and his wife. They love them, and you know, everybody there loved it. I enjoyed watching everybody there like it. But I'm on mushrooms, right?
Right.
And every word I said was wrong all night long. Like, I was at the bar, and the guy in front of me like bragged about having cocaine to like these women, and I'm sure it was fine, but like in my self-righteous mushrooms brain, I'm like, you better tip them $1,000, Mr. Millionaire.
Right. Right.
Meanwhile, I'm like, two beers? $4? I just couldn't stop getting in my own way.
Dude, can I say too about I don't do drugs anymore at all. And I suppose that's not like a decision I made in an extreme moment. So maybe one day, but I don't think so. And looking back at that time when I would do a lot of drugs, mushrooms is the funniest one because the entire discussion around mushrooms is like, man, it's wonderful. It's so fun. You laugh. It changes your life. It adds peace to your mind. All this shit. But that's only the experience I've had coming down from mushrooms.
Yeah.
The entire time you're hanging out with people on mushrooms and you're going up, you're getting higher and higher, and then you're peaking, no one has fun. No. Everybody is panicking. No one knows how to talk. Everyone. I remember one time I took mushrooms with a bunch of dudes at a house in Pasadena. There were like 15 of us, and I was just sitting outside with like 8 guys sitting around a table trying to talk. No one could talk. Mm. And then a guy walked in and said, is the ice cream outside or inside? And then we all started laughing.
Yeah.
And thank God we could laugh. I guess my point is, like, I don't think I fully believe that people do not have fun on mushrooms.
Yeah.
And then what mushrooms does is, the effect of the drug is it makes you think you had fun.
I've stopped taking an amount that would scare me.
Maybe that's what it is. Because I would almost take a half eighth
take
or more.
One mushroom.
Oh, yeah.
One.
Okay.
And I am such a lightweight.
Sure.
That one was not, like, yeah, no, I do not spend, I just am like, let's
I
do
think
a little
that's
bit.
Probably it. All my stupid fucking druggy friends, we would just like eat an entire wet bag.
I call just, it getting high school stoned. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You'll never get more stoned than you would get in high
right.
school. Because it's like, we got to smoke all of this so no one finds it.
Dude, also, I was one of those fucking like MacGyver smokers in high school.
Yeah?
That was just like, yeah, man, I bought a gas can and a 5-foot tube. Let's figure it out.
Oh, that's
and
so
like
funny.
I made a one time I was like I made a pipe out of a super soaker, and I remember 4 of us were
that's
smoking
fun.
And my buddy yeah, and it worked well, but I couldn't get the like hitter in right, and I was like, ah, I'm almost there, and my friend Bobby grabbed it out of my hand and threw it into the woods and just stared at me. And then we just smoked out of a pipe.
Yeah, we would always. After high school, we would disc golf in Iowa, and we would smoke weed at the end of the ninth. There's this nice overlook in Dubuque, Iowa, over the
great.
Bluffs. It was great.
Yeah.
And then we would lose our discs on the 10th hole. Every time. Just, like, we'd get too high, and, like, I don't know where that
were. Were they your discs, or do you, like,
buy
them?
We would buy them all the time. Yeah, it was like, hey, man, this is so fun. Then we get high, and we're terrified, and we can't find our discs. I'm like, what are we doing? All right.
Oh, my God. That's so
funny. So this
has
been a fun drug catch-up.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Ross, you're a great comedian.
Hello. Thank you.
Are in a great sketch comedy group, which we'll get to.
Sure.
So I found out a show that I was working on didn't go because of a thing you did. We'll get there. We're going to tease it.
I never knew about this.
Yeah. Well, I think like Jake Wiseman has the same agent as I do.
Oh, okay.
And what happened was I sold this show to IFC as well.
Uh-huh.
And then so they did to you what they were about to do to me. They're like, hey, we're going to have a meeting to talk about your show you turned in.
Okay.
And the meeting was, your show's not sold.
Oh.
So, but no, they had it like with Jake or you guys or something.
We had that crazy meeting.
So IFC like calls. So I was supposed to have the meeting the next day.
Okay.
And so IFC tells you guys, we're not making any new shows. I have my call the next day with IFC to tell me that. And my agent just called me. She's like, I just got off the phone with IFC.
Oh my God. Actually, you know what's so funny? I had this same agent too. And I didn't know that this was you, but
yeah.
I knew that this happened.
Okay.
Because
yeah,
I talked to her.
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, that was fucked up because I found out accidentally that my other show, so I called him and told him.
That was me.
And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Oh my God, dude. That's insane.
Yeah, it was the show I was working on.
Dude, that was fucking crazy because we had gone all the way down the line with them. We didn't shoot a pilot, but they did. We had written the pilot. And then they bought the pilot, and they wanted us to do a few rewrites on it with a head writer and to create a full written season arc, but not all the scripts, just like an outline of a whole season. It was weird.
And they are not paying well.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But at the time,
IFC.
Yes.
But at the time, who cares?
Who cares?
We have a TV show.
Yeah, exactly. And so we're waiting and waiting and waiting. And then we get this call from our reps that's like, okay, we don't know what's happening exactly, but IFC scheduled a meeting with you guys tomorrow at this time.
And
they email us the list of people in the meeting,
it's
like 25 fucking people or something like that. It's IFC LA and New York.
So you're in our, I was like, okay, cool. This means they're going to say, hey, let's do this.
They're not going to gather 25 people to say no.
They do.
They do. It was unbelievable. And I even, as like a comedian who'd been around 3 or 4 years, I was like, they tell us no, and we're gathered around a phone, the four of us.
Yeah.
Just like, and I like it, and this isn't because, I don't know, I'm so tough or something.
Right.
It was literally because I wasn't thinking, and I just felt so insane. I was like, why did you do this call?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, one of our reps was like, yeah.
What are you doing?
Oh, God, what was it, too? They said, oh, my God. Oh, wow. Oh, my God. Dude, I forgot about this part.
Okay.
So they gather everybody on the call, and they're like, you know, they do that, like, Hollywood small talk shit where they're just like, how are you? Right.
I ask my reps. I'm like, you need to tell me good news, bad news as soon as you get
exactly.
on the phone. Good news, bad news as soon as you get on the phone. And they're like, okay.
So they don't do that with us. And so this is one of the, like, the woman running the meeting said this, dude, I'll never believe it. And said it with this amount of weight, said, okay, well, we're all gathered here right now. I've talked to everybody at IFC and there's just this big question on our minds that we just got to ask you. And we just need your answer right now.
Holy shit.
We just need your answer right now. What do you prefer, chocolate or cheese?
Get the fuck out of
and
here.
And we were like, what? But we're all like,
You're about to break
trying
up
trying to small
me.
Talk.
You're going to break
and
up
And we didn't
with
know
me.
That yet. Yeah. So we were just answering like a bunch of fucking lunatics, just like, I don't know. It depends on the kind of cheese.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they fire us. And it was just like,
you kept me from having to answer that because I did not have that call. Because our agent was like, fuck off. No, it's just
yeah,
no.
Good for her. She's great. We're like, I don't work with them anymore, but I love her.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, that's how I 100% Danielle Schoenberg is the greatest agent in the United States.
She's incredible.
Okay, so enough bullshit talk. This is not a
a Hollywood
catching
podcast.
Up with the boys. This is about the jobs you had that led to you selling television shows.
Uh huh.
Dave Ross, where the frick are you from?
I'm kind of from everywhere, man. I was a Navy kid.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
This is great. I didn't know that. I've known you over a decade. I did not know that you were a Navy kid.
Yeah, well, it's easier when people ask where I'm from and it's not in a context where we're going to talk a while.
Right.
I just say New York.
Okay.
Because my dad, we moved every 3 years of my life. And then.
And this is why you're a big Republican.
Yeah, 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 totally. not just I'm not really a Republican. I just like Donald Trump. Yeah.
You're a single issue guy, right?
Yeah. It's, totally. I just want the president to be a piece of shit.
Yeah, you're pro-life, but you want the, guy, you vote for a guy who definitely has had so many abortions.
Right.
But you like that he doesn't let other
Well, I'm pro-life, and I'm also pro-death.
I tried doing that bit on stage. I'm not pro-choice. I'm pro-abortion.
Yeah.
People don't like it.
Yeah,
people
yeah.
People don't love that joke.
Yeah, we all like, isn't it funny just how real it is? Mm-hmm. The like, I mean, look, I don't want to go on a rant, so let's just not even, right? Mm-hmm. But like, privilege is just real, right?
Yeah.
And we're all like learning and learning and learning so hard, especially over the most recent years. And I had a joke like a few years ago where I would go on stage and be like, I'm pro-choice, but not because I like abortion, because I love murder. And I would just like call abortion murder. And one of my female friends was like, Dave, fuck you, man.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Sure. Got it.
I tried to get the crowd in Texas to chant abortion.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. They didn't love it.
Well, that's funny, though.
No, exactly.
That's funny.
mine wasn't necessarily like calling it was a joke of a couple gets in a fight. You know, and then the reveal is it was their gender reveal party, you know, and
uh-huh.
It's not too late, you know, that's like, you know, glossing over the idea. That's not even the joke, the abortion, but the idea is like, you guys shouldn't probably have a kid.
Yeah.
And then nobody laughed. And then I just started slowly. You know, you like find yourself 6 feet deep and you're like, let's keep going.
Well, that's a little different, though, because you're at least sort of trying to yell
like,
fuck you at these assholes.
Like, oh, we didn't like that joke? Let's go way harder. All
right. Yeah,
so
totally.
You're from everywhere. Your dad was in the Navy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then when I was 12, after seventh grade, he retired and we moved to Orange County, New York, which is like an hour north of the city. Mm-hmm. And eighth grade in high school, I spent there. I say I'm from there.
Yeah. Well, that is from there. How far into the Navy was your dad? Like what was his final rank?
Commander, right below captain.
Dude!
Commander, I know. Isn't that a crazy... Isn't it crazy that commander is below captain, too? I've always thought that was wild.
You know what? Like, you should... Like, it really makes you make more sense to me. That your dad was a commander in the
Yeah,
Navy.
He's a commander, dude. I got commanded.
I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
All right, Dave tracks a little more.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, and if you meet my dad, it really explains all of it. I was saying this to somebody the other day because my dad is very much a Navy guy and he was a commander, but also my dad, I really am like I am what happens after my dad. For sure. He's a Democrat. He's a liberal in the Navy. And he was an officer and he had no friends who were officers except for the occasional other Democrat. But, you know, every Navy officer is a fucking Republican. And so he had no friends and he was very like he's a very emotional guy. So he's an emotional Navy officer who's a liberal.
Emotional, friendless Navy officer.
Yes, exactly. And so, like, my dad is definitely has, like, a lot of difficulty processing his own emotions, and that creates its own problems, obviously. But also, he definitely is feelingsy. And so, if you think about, like, that's why I'm like how I am. He was like angry all the time and screaming and it took everything fucking personally. But he also, when I was a little kid, my mom would like stop me from crying and he would be like, no, let him cry. My dad never let me cry. He was like the mix of all of that.
Whoa.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
That's an interesting character.
Another thing, one thing that I really, and my dad and I, man, we've had a weird, I was mad at him for a really, really long fucking time. And there's some stuff.
You're mad at your Navy dad?
My Navy dad. Yeah, who would have thought? The comedian's son is mad at his Navy dad? Yeah. Doesn't make any sense.
In a sketch group called Women, who has hard abortion jokes.
Yeah,
doesn't
dude.
Like his Navy commander dad.
I got a huge, I mean, you know this. So, and it's less so now because I'm older and I've processed it a lot. But for a long time, all my comedy was about masculinity and how much it pisses me off. but my dad, we had like a weird, it was tough for a long time. And then, because like I said, he's really angry and it got fucked up a bunch of times. And I didn't like how angry he was with my mother.
And I was just so mad for a long time. And then, dude, it was two Christmases ago, I think. Christmas morning, I like hadn't been there in a while, and all this stuff I'm telling you now had been like stuck in my head and really like fucking me up. And we got into a discussion about other people we know that are abusers. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know how that happened, but I just like freaked out and yelled at my dad. I was like, "You abused me as a kid." I just like screamed at him, and he goes, "I know, and I'm sorry."
Wow.
And then he like sat there and like listened to me bitch at him and like scream cry at him how pissed I was, and he just said sorry, and he's like, "I think about it all the time, and it's wrong, and we're good."
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not how those conversations
go. No, ever. Yeah. Yeah, ever.
A Christmas morning yell cry?
I know, dude.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it was crazy. All yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, I'm happy. That's awesome.
Yeah, so that's...
Rock and roll. All yeah. Right. So you bounce all over the place. What was the favorite place you lived, like, as a kid? Because that's fun when you're... I don't know if it's fun.
It's, you know, at the time, it's just what it is. You don't fucking know.
Right.
And, yeah, looking back, it was hard in a bunch of ways I, like, couldn't have possibly realized. But, like, where did I... So I was born in Hawaii, and we moved there when I was 3 months from there when I was 3 months old, so I don't remember it. Then San Diego till I was three, and I don't remember that. Then we lived in Italy for 3 years, and I barely remember that, but I do remember that when we moved back to the States, my parents made a point of like taking me all around Europe for like a month, mm-hmm. and that was dope. That I remember they like we stayed in this like weird fucking just like, you know, 700-year-old house in Germany and shit, and we went to castles in Scotland and shit like that, and that was cool. And then we lived in Chicago.
Yeah.
Because I lived in Gurnee, and which is where the Outlet Mall and the Six Flags both are.
Yeah, that's where I almost went to Warped Tour in 2008.
Oh, in Gurnee? At the Six Flags?
Yeah, that's when Warped Tour
was. Like in the parking lot?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when you're like, I guess I don't need to see. I don't even, Oceanside? I don't even know what the
dude,
band that was.
I did Warped Tour in 2015. I was on the fucking tour.
I remember you guys did that, and I remember like a rare occasion of not being jealous.
Yeah, yeah.
I was
yeah.
like, that looks terrible.
It
like,
was terrible.
Yeah,
dude.
Like that's mm-hmm. isn't me putting you down. I'm like, that looks tough.
No, dude,
man.
And it was weird because like Eli Olsberg and Grant Cotter booked it, so it was mostly their friends, and Eli is like the. Like, you would think that Warped Tour comedians would be a bunch of fucking loud, screamy people.
Yeah,
but Eli is a mild-mannered guy who's friends with... So, the people on the festival, dude, Melissa Villasenor was on the festival. Chase Bernstein.
Yeah.
In a tent. And our shows were at noon and 2.
And you gotta hope that... Yeah, I've done outside fests, and you just are like, I hope that the band across the lot is quiet.
Yeah.
They're not.
They're not. And there's like 7 stages. We were next to the acoustic tent, but the acoustic tent had mics.
Yeah.
It was also... Dude, it's hot. It's dusty. The only... I did 2 weeks of it, and the only part of it where we had a crowd was in Pittsburgh, and it was because it was raining.
Incredible.
And people wanted to come in the tent.
Yeah. Yeah. The only festival that did it right was Bonnaroo, and
I've never done Bonnaroo.
Stopped doing comedy, and it's
fuck.
A bummer.
Yeah.
They had, because it's an inside tent, it was great. Okay. So, Dave, you
yes.
lived all over the place.
Yes.
Gurnee. And, but what was your first job? This is a podcast about jobs, because we'll
oh,
get
man.
To how you sell TV shows and you start. What
we don't need to fuck TV shows.
Right. But this is not a podcast about that. But I also want to get to the part where you started what I still believe was the most important comedy show for me.
Oh.
Holy Fuck, at the Downtown Independent Theater.
Oh, man.
Like,
yeah.
That was so important. So, like, for me, and, like, you know.
For me, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For,
yeah.
For both of us. I think, like, 2011. It was the show. It was downtown Los Angeles. Dave put it on. It was fucking jammed.
It was
the best
was
show
the best.
In Los Angeles.
It was the best.
For like 2 years.
Well, yeah. It was also, do you want to talk about that or do you want
to
talk about
the
job?
Let's
okay,
get
okay.
to that. So what was your first job?
My first job was, I was like.
I also like how I'm so bad at interviewing that I'm like, hey, we're about to talk about this very.
But I'm
going to
say this unrelated thing
yeah,
that we'll get to later.
Yeah, but instead of talking about, you know, one of the most important scenes of comedy in my whole
talk
life.
About your first job.
Did you work at Subway?
Let's talk about Subway.
Yeah.
My first job was I was just a general worker guy at, was this my first job? Yeah. At Burger King in Warwick, New York.
Wow. Yeah, okay. Dude. I am excited about this.
Oh,
now.
Dude.
Dude, how was that?
It was fine. You know, I was 16, maybe 15. I think I was 16.
I mean, it's the most.
And you get paid $6 an hour or whatever.
Oh, I was making $5.15. Baby.
Yeah, nice.
You got that New York minimum wage.
Totally.
Dude, I'm so mad at my brother because he has three children right now.
Mm-hmm.
Three boys. They're like 12, 10, and 6. And he's like against a national minimum wage of $15 an hour. I'm like,
wow.
No one stands to benefit from this more than you. You have three. Like,
totally.
These kids have no skills,
yeah.
And they are immediately going to make enough money where they could buy a car, and you could, you know, you don't have to give them money. Like,
yeah.
You're voting against your own self-interest,
man.
You psycho.
It's so crazy. I don't even want to, you know what, man, I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole because I'm so mad about that shit nowadays.
I was like, dude.
What are we talking about?
Yeah, like they can take. He's like, well, then McDonald's is gonna be $45. I go, okay, who cares?
$45.
Like, and no, it won't. McDonald's will always be $1. We're never ever going to go past a $1.
Did you know that this is true? This is a real fact. Every single day of the week at Applebee's, at every Applebee's in the world,
I can't wait.
Every day of the week. There's a drink that costs $1.
Well, that's new, and I love that. Yeah, no, it's a few years old.
And if there's a $1 margarita every day at Applebee's everywhere on Earth, McDonald's is not going to be $45. There's something going on.
I went and got bombed at the Applebee's in Joshua Tree because of the.
Applebee's.
It was a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
And we were like, hey, let's go get drunk. It was like a dollar margarita.
Yeah.
Like a new promotion. It comes out of a bucket.
Good.
A ladle.
Hell
in a
yeah,
bucket.
Dude. I wish it came out of a trough.
All right, dude. You want the dollar margarita? I'm gonna pop in the bathroom real quick and grab it. Okay.
It comes in a toilet.
Yeah. Okay. Fuck. All right. So you worked at Burger King. This is
dude.
Classic first job.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the most American first job you could possibly have. I liked it fine. I mean, I like you know, it's whatever. It was. I'm glad I did it because. Actually, I have no feelings about the fact that I did it. It was fine.
Yeah.
The people I worked with were, like, some were funny. Most of them were just trying to get the day done. Mm-hmm. There was one dude who was, like, a high-functioning learning-disabled guy, and he loved Burger King so much.
Okay.
It was one of, I still think about it sort of frequently. It was, like, one of the most endearing thing. Like, I really wished that I could be like that. He would literally, dude, I'm not even fucking with you. We would open. It would be 5 a.m. We show up, and I'm like, fuck, dude. I'm like 16. It's the summer. I don't want to be there. And he's like, hey, man, did you hear? The Whopper Jr.'s back.
Yes.
And I would be like, I didn't know that, dude. That's awesome.
Dude, I remember this made me, this is an ex-girlfriend, that it made me like her. I probably dated her for another year because she said this. We were at Universal Studios, and there was a couple on their honeymoon, and it said, you know, like husband or wife on their shirts, and they were getting a photo with Bumblebee, a Transformer.
Sure.
And she said, God, I wish it was fucking stupid. And I was like, yeah. That would rock. Like, it would be so fun if I wanted a photo with Bumblebee.
Yeah, I suppose that I...
right? You know,
I suppose that I shouldn't...
You will date someone another year if they say that.
Right.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah.
And I, like, when I tell that story about that dude
at
Burger King, I always wonder...
And he wasn't...
Should I say the learning disabled part? Because it's like, it shouldn't have to be a caveat that you're a Burger King nerd.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would like to think I live in a world where there are people that just love Burger King. But the reality is that in order to, you have to like let a lot of things go in order to just full blown love fucking Burger King. You just do.
Yeah.
And he was able to. Yeah. And honestly, I really love it and respect
it. No, exactly.
Yeah,
man,
yeah.
I wish on a honeymoon, I was like, let's go to Universal Studios and take a photo with the Shia LaBeouf Transformer guy.
Yeah, like, dude. Man, I think about this a lot, how, like, and I'll bet you can relate to this, because you grew up in, like, a semi-rural area. My area was, like, it was an hour from the city, but I lived in a town with one stoplight, no grocery store, and 3,000 people.
Yeah, you couldn't. I lived in the woods.
Yeah,
there
totally.
There were no houses.
I would get phone calls and be like, hey, man, do you want to come over and shoot trees? You know what I mean? Like,
I shot trees.
Yeah, we would shoot trees.
I was the one calling.
Yeah.
Come over.
Oh, I remember you. Yeah. My buddy, I called my buddy Henry once, and I was like, what's up? And he's like, oh, dude, come over. Kurt's over. We're making napalm in the yard.
Yep.
And I'm not going to tell you how to make napalm, but I will say that it is easy.
We would duct tape. So fireworks were illegal. So we would buy, but sparklers weren't. And
right.
So we would just duct tape thousands of sparklers as tight as we could. And then you light a wick and it's a bomb.
Right.
We were just,
right.
Most of growing up was trying to make bombs.
Trying to blow shit up.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, you want to come over? We're going to make a bomb. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Of
awesome.
Course I fucking do.
All right.
But so, there was some, yeah, why were we? Oh, Burger King. Oh, yeah. Wherever you grow up, you're like wherever you are in life, right? You're friends with the people that relate to you, that you bond with. And I think now, like, the older and older you get, the more you end up relating to and bonding with and being around people that are your general intelligence level. And that doesn't mean that you're so smart, but just generally you, like, have the same conceptual style thoughts and you can talk to each other. Mm-hmm. But when you're growing up, the people you relate to and that you're friends with are the people that are around, that grew up in the same place as
you.
No,
that's exactly... I saw a different TV show about this.
Okay.
Because it was people in college who graduate college and they realize they're the only reason they're friends is because they are from the same town. They have nothing in common.
So a thing that is really missing from my life, I really miss it, is having stupid friends. And I just don't have them anymore. But like back at home, I had a bunch of dumb friends because that was the people that I knew.
Yeah.
And not everybody was dumb, but we had some dumb friends. And the great thing about dumb friends is they have fast cars. And they have, like, a Bowflex. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
dumb friends are the people where
you love Goldschlager.
They love it. Everyone has the friend that you grew up with where when you got in their car, you weren't talking because their music was too loud.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just
what?
So loud.
Yeah,
like,
dude.
Who's this for?
Right.
What are you doing?
You're 16, and like, and your friend is like, I had my Corolla lowered.
Yeah.
And you're like, why?
Yeah, I had my Corolla that I blast Mudvayne.
Yeah.
Lowered. Okay. So you were, yeah. I mean, it's crazy. And also, you can relate to this. And I have friends from my hometown that, like, they can't function in cities.
Oh, sure.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
100%. They would come visit in college, and I was like, they can't go to the bar.
Yeah.
They do crazy bad.
They make an ass of themselves and me.
No, they did stuff that like wasn't funny. Even I remember there was this bar, and you know, it's two stories. And there's a dance floor, and my friend was on the second. We're up on the second story or whatever, drinking beers. Glass. A glass. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I just meant like not a cup.
Yeah.
A heavy glass.
Like a pint glass.
Pint glass. Thank you. Yeah. Finished it, tossed it over the side, on to people dancing.
What?
Yeah. This. And now it's where I was like, I can't hang out with this guy anymore.
Yeah. Totally.
Like, fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a bad guy.
Right.
What are you doing?
Right.
That's crazy.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was literally
that's assault.
It was a guy who was still living in Manchester, the town in front, that came to Iowa City. And I remember I went and I told my friends, I was like, he can't come anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be around that guy. He throws missiles at the bar.
Did it hit anybody?
I don't know, man. I got out of there.
Yeah, no shit.
I was like, I'm gone. I can't be around here.
Good
okay.
God.
So, yeah. Just like, idiot friend, you know, fun to hang out with until that moment.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
All right. So, Burger King. How
yeah,
long
dude.
Do you work there?
I think I just worked there that summer. I don't remember if it was the summer after my 11th grade year or my 12th grade year. I think. Oh, no. It was 12th grade because.
You're old then for Burger King.
Yeah, dude. I was 37.
I'm
high school.
Like, you graduated high school and worked at Burger King.
Yeah, totally. But I also started school young. I was 17 when I graduated.
Oh, never mind then.
Yeah.
I was like 19.
Oh, okay.
I'm like old. I could like almost drive to middle school.
Oh, dude, that I love that.
Yeah,
I,
well, it's because in Iowa, you only need to be 14 and a half to have a school permit.
Oh, my God.
That's eighth grade.
No shit. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So this isn't, I'm just saying this for the story. It's like not a brag, but it's also especially not a brag because I was salutatorian of my high school.
What's that mean?
That's second, right underneath valedictorian.
Woof.
And when I tell people that,
yeah,
they're either like, oh, well, la-di-da, mister, why'd you tell me that, you know? And, It's especially, like, obviously, who the fuck cares now, especially that I'm 39, but it's also really not a big deal because I graduated with 80 other kids.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, I got like a, I had like a 3.5 GPA. You know what I mean?
It
like,
was
it wasn't impressive.
You probably had a 4.0.
Yeah, something like that, but it wasn't like, it wasn't as lofty as some.
Right.
It doesn't matter. But anyway, my town was called Greenwood Lake. Warwick was the neighboring town. My town was way smaller, and so the two towns shared a newspaper. Mm-hmm. Another thing about my life, it was literally called like the Warwick Greenwood Lake newspaper or something like that.
Yeah, a lot of creative writing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And another thing about my life then was like, I didn't really drink yet or do drugs yet, I don't think. What I did with my life was my friend Bobby and I went to like 4 punk shows a week and like fucking fire halls and American Legion halls and anywhere we could find a punk show in the area, North Jersey, New York City, Southern New York, wherever, right? And we were the only two kids in our tiny high school that did that, but there were a ton of punk kids in Warwick, and I didn't really know them very well, but I knew them from shows, right?
Right.
So I'm like, you know, I get this thing. I don't think it's a big deal. I don't really care to have come in second at this tiny school. But they put me on the front of the fucking paper.
Right.
And I work at Burger King. And all these Warwick punks find out about it.
Okay.
And they come in one day. And I'm like in the back making burgers and shit.
Well, Whopper
and
I Juniors. Just,
yeah, Whopper Juniors.
They're back.
And, yeah, chicken sandwiches.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
the whole menu.
Excited, yeah.
And like 10 of them, dude, these 10 fucking punk kids who are all 17 just come in with like, you know, like, I don't know how many punks you knew, but they all got like bones in their noses and green hair and whatever.
I mean, the punk that I got a punk a job at Papa John's, but he worked there one day, then refused to give them his social security number. So he had to quit.
Right.
And he would wear a Cradle of Filth shirt to school most days.
Hell
and
yeah.
Said, Jesus was a cunt.
Yeah.
And they would be immediately like, Mitch, turn it inside out. Like,
dude.
So I do know punk kids is what I'm
punks
saying.
Punks in like big liberal bubble cities, you know, might have good taste and
right.
look cool. But fucking punks in the South and the Midwest and in like rural areas,
yeah.
they're like actually doing it.
They're scary. Like yeah, I remember being nervous.
I aspired to be that. I tried. I would like go to the store and like try to get chains and a big shorts. And I don't think I ever did it right.
So these guys with the bones in the nose.
I was exaggerating. They had, just nose rings
aware,
and fucking.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they come in and I start hearing a kerfuffle and they're all like, these people are laughing. And then I hear someone say like, yeah, I would like a Whopper, please. And I would like it to be made by the fucking salutatorian of Tuxedo High School, please.
Oh,
and then they're just yelling like, hey, salutatorian, make my fucking chicken sandwich. And it's in fun.
Right.
They're like being my friends,
mm-hmm.
but they're just like screaming. And I'm like, oh my God. It was like the most embarrassing at the time. Now I like the story,
right.
but at the time it was the end of my life. I was like, I will die tonight.
Yeah.
I don't want to be here.
You guys are embarrassing me in front of my Burger King.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Okay. So you Burger King it up. You're a smarty. Where do you go to college?
USC.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that. Why?
I don't know, man. I don't know why I did most things for a while.
I mean, USC, like, for an 18-year-old, the dream. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, from a person not from...
Especially from, like, a rural, cold, fucking...
I wanted to go to NYU or USC, and I naturally settled on Iowa. But,
sure.
but those were the dream schools.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So how come? Like, you just were like, let's do it. Like, what did you go to school for?
Dude, honestly, I wanted to get away. That was, like, a big part of it. Also, I had never heard of the school. I don't know how it's a real bubble out there where I'm from. I hadn't had hummus until I got to college. I hadn't even heard of it. Damn. I had never had sushi.
I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I told my mom I had oysters the other day, and she goes, "Who made you?"
Jamie Loftus has this great joke she's doing now about how she went home and she had a Starbucks cup, and her dad was like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize we were in fucking France."
Jeez. And I well, that's the other thing. Like, dude, fucking with politicians are like, "Oh, does someone like Starbucks?" I'm like, the mega corporation.
Yeah, dude.
Starbucks is Walmart.
Yeah, what are we talking
Starbucks
about?
Starbucks is in Walmart.
They're in gas stations. They're in grocery stores.
Yeah, I'm like, Starbucks is not good. Like, look,
it's not like a Whole Foods, which, by the way, also is everywhere.
Also Walmart. Yeah. Okay. But I remember, when Whole Foods opened in Des Moines, Iowa.
Oh, boy.
And that's 4 hours from where I lived.
Uh-huh.
And, but it made it to my town. There's a Whole Foods in Des Moines.
Oh, boy.
And my mom said, I heard strawberries are $10 a piece there.
Yes, dude. Fuck yeah.
What are we talking
about? That's the funniest.
Okay. So you go to USC because you want out. What do you study?
I started as a theater major. And
did you
then,
always like acting, or was was the goal comedy?
No, the goal was not comedy, dude. Here's the thing, man. I always, my whole life, have loved stand up comedy, and I'll bet I don't know, man. I don't know how you felt about it, but I've always loved entertainment. I was in theater all 4 years of high school, and but it never occurred to me that I could be an entertainer for a living, especially stand-up. I would literally, dude, they would have those weekend-long marathons of the Comedy Central Presents, I would watch the whole thing all weekend.
This has come up so often on this podcast because I interview other guys and women in our 30s.
Yeah.
We lucked out with stand-up comedy and how we got to watch it growing up.
Yeah.
It was
Premium Blend
never
was the shit.
Not on.
Yeah. It was always on, and I loved it. And literally, I would obsessively watch it. And if I found out one was on, I would get so excited. And there's two really interesting things about that to me when I was a kid. One, if you had asked me, what are you into? My answer never would have been stand-up comedy. For some reason, it never occurred to me how much I loved it. And two, it never occurred to me that it would be possible to do it. Mm-hmm. I had to literally... So the short version of the story for me is I went to college. I changed majors 3 times. I didn't know what the fuck to do. I got a job 6 hours a week as a radio DJ. And then when I quit that, a bunch of the DJs were trying stand up and I tried it. That's
where
what happened.
Were you?
In Fresno.
In Fresno.
Oh, yeah. Dude, my work's life is fucking bananas.
Let's blow through it because then I want to get to comedy.
Okay, yeah.
So just quick, run us through.
Okay, so I go to USC. I was a theater major. It was hard, and I didn't like that.
That can't be true. That's not true at all.
Dude, it was hard. You know what, though? It wasn't hard to do the theater. Yeah. It was hard to get to class.
I get that. Okay. I understand that. Okay.
Also, yeah, man, I did. My college experience was crazy. I was, trying to figure it all out. I did a lot of drugs, all of them, all the way up to heroin. I never injected heroin, but I smoked heroin a lot for a long time, my entire senior year. So it was pretty easy to, ignore things. And I just wanted to have an easy major.
I bet theater is pretty hard when you're doing heroin. you're probably right.
I think a lot of things are hard. Also, a lot of things are easy. heroin really makes everything easy hard.
I've never thought about or been interested in trying heroin, so yeah. I don't want to ask you about it.
Yeah, don't do it.
I don't want to be what's good about it? Because the answer is nothing, but I'm sure it's fun when you do it.
I'll actually tell you why it's great and honestly, I'm confident that this will convince everyone in the world to never do it.
Okay, good. That's all I want. I don't want to encourage heroin use.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Okay.
And I got after school specialed into it. I was lied to that it was just opium. And then after I'd done it 3 times, I was told that it was black tar heroin. And then I was already in and I was oh, it's not so bad. And then I started doing it. I wouldn't have done it otherwise if I wasn't lied to. And
I have a joke about I did meth one time.
Yeah.
And
you thought it was
The joke is here's how
I thought it was cake.
Here's how you the joke is here's how you you know you did meth, you go, this coke seems sandy. And then you're up forever.
Oh, dude.
It was a nightmare.
That was a long time. So,
was at the Montreal, it was actually at the Montreal Comedy Festival the first year I went there. Somebody gave Kinane a bag of drugs, and he goes, oh, it seems like more Brooks' speed, you know? And I'm 26, and I'm just like,
funny.
Kyle Kinane just gave me drugs. Kyle Kinane's the funniest person on the planet.
Yeah.
I got to do the Kyle Kinane drugs.
Yeah, yeah.
Not thinking Kyle Kinane's not
he didn't
doing
do them.
These.
He didn't want them.
All right. So go on. Why explain why it works.
So the reason I loved heroin was that when I was on it, I felt like that this is the real me. If I were to never have ever been anxious or stressed. And that is legitimately, I fully believe that's legitimately why people like Bradley Knowles, Kurt Cobain, John Lennon were all like writing this shit, because they were uninhibited by their own self-doubt and self-hatred and worry while they were writing. But the problem with believing that you're the real you had you never had stress is that, one, it's of course not true, but two, if that's your state of mind, then heroin replaces literally every single defense mechanism that you have. And so I became incapable of handling life. And when I wouldn't be on it, I was always upset. I had no idea how to process conflict or anything negative coming my way at all. And when I completely quit, I was suicidally depressed for years. And yeah, I mean, it's like not good.
No.
It's something, it's one thing to get high, you know, and like there's all sorts of argument about the validity of that and whatever, you know, but seeking out an experience to get you high, whatever. I don't like hate, but do drugs, fucking whatever. But something that what it does is it becomes how you cope. That's what it was. That's what it is. Yeah. That's why people love it. It copes for you, and fuck that. It ruins your life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why I enjoy camping, because right. I get the same like dopamine drop when I see a mountain.
Yeah.
In the morning, as I do if I do drugs.
You yeah.
know, I'm like, oh wow, and this is like an earned dopamine drop.
Dude, there's so many things like that. Like if you wake up and you have a glass of juice instead of a coffee, you're gonna feel just about as awake.
Yeah.
Incredible. But okay. Yeah, yeah.
So how do you end up at Fresno working at this place?
Yeah. So because of like doing a shitload of drugs and not really knowing what I wanted to do in life, I switched majors 3 or 4 times and I ended up with a degree in psychology. I switched from theater to math to psychology. That's how all over the place I was.
Holy shit.
And so I have a degree in psychology, and having a bachelor's in psychology is like having a bachelor's in talking or reading. It's like, you have to get a master's degree in order to be considered for anything at all, and you should probably have a doctorate. So I basically had a degree in nothing, and I had had a campus radio show, and I was such like a fucking jerk off.
I mean, there's nothing more fun than being on the radio. Like I got to do. My friend had a radio show, Jared Hotan, and I got to like be on it one day. And like, there's nothing more exciting than DJing.
Oh, dude, it's so fun. It's like, so fun. You get to play stuff you like.
You get to play your favorite music.
And then chill.
And then people congratulate you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, totally. You get to be funny in like 10-second spurts four times an hour while listening to music that makes you feel good and then hanging out while that shit just does most of the work.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
hey, guess what, guys? I like the Rolling Stones, too.
Exactly. You know, it's like having a job in corporate radio as a DJ is like more work for sure, but it's still a lot like that.
Wait,
yeah.
Did you ever work in corporate?
Okay, yeah. So I graduated. I didn't know what to do. I was doing heroin all the time, and I was like, well, radio, you know? And I didn't even know, dude. When you make a tape to get a job in radio, you just make a 5-minute tape of you talking. And I didn't realize that. So I found some websites that had like a bunch of like part-time entry-level radio job openings. And I sent tapes out to probably 50 radio stations in the country. And the tape I sent was a 2-hour tape that included all of the music from my punk radio show. And
imagine, so you book You book comedy shows.
Right.
Can you imagine someone sent you an hour set? That's what you did.
Yeah. Except it's like someone sent me an hour set and it has hold on. 10 other comedians doing time.
Like, they sent you a show they were on.
Yeah. It's like they sent me a video of holy fuck. Yeah,
Incredible. Okay. So,
and
it turns out Fresno dug it.
I get one response from a Clear Channel active rock radio station in Fresno called 103.7 KRZR, The Wild Hare. And that's H-A-R-E. So it's like a crazy rabbit. And I go up there and I interview, and the job is 6 hours a week, Thursday night, midnight to 6 a.m. And the thing is that, like, that wasn't a position they had open. They had, like, the way that the day was broken up was there was, like, the morning DJs, then there was someone from 10 to 3, someone from 3 to 7, someone from 7 to midnight, and someone from midnight to 6. Okay. The guy from midnight to 6, his name was Ashton, and he just wanted to try me out, so he gave me one of those nights a week, Thursday.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't have anything else going on, so I moved from L.A. to Fresno for 6 hours a week and tried to get another job, and so I ended up, like, just diving headfirst into radio because I had nothing else going on, learning fucking production software and being sidekicks on shows and doing fucking stunts and all sorts of shit.
It's such like a good way to, I had Mo Welch on last week, exactly how she got into comedy.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a nice entry, quote unquote, I mean,
dude,
to use my own podcast intro. It's an entry level into entertainment.
Yes, exactly. Especially since, dude, I'm so like, I've said it a few times on the show already. I'm so nervous. It's a thing I've had to really just accept about myself. I'm terrified. I'm terrified, and it's just, like, in my bones all the time. Terrified everyone hates me. Terrified I'm doing something wrong. Terrified. So I have stage fright like fucking crazy. And I don't know if I would have been able to start stand-up if I didn't have this sort of, like, microphone but no audience around me. Mm. 2 year safety period where I got to just sort of figure out how to even be around a mic.
Very similar to Mo.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She was just like, yeah. He's like, oh, wow. Okay. This is fun. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I get to be funny, cool, but I'm not nervous.
Especially, man, and I'm grateful to the program director of that station. His name is E. Curtis Johnson. I'm grateful for him. And I will be for the rest of my life. And he's a good guy. He was very good to me.
Hell
and
yeah.
He was like, This is what he was like. He was probably in his 50s then. He had founded the station in 1989. He's Mormon, but thinks polygamy is wrong. And he's like very virtuous Mormon man.
I think most Mormons think polygamy is wrong.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's only fundamental. There's this book called Under the Banner of Heaven by John Krakauer that talks about fundamentalism.
Oh, I don't know anything about Mormonism, I guess.
I would say 99% of Mormons, probably even higher, are not polygamous.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, he was like a deeply virtuous person.
Let me talk to you about becoming.
And so he was great. And in order to make ends meet, dude, that was, I mean, talk about jobs, man. That part of my life, it was 2004 to 2006. They paid me. By the end of that 2 years, I was probably at the station 60 hours a week, but I got paid for 32, so they didn't have to take me to full time, so I didn't get benefits or anything.
Yeah,
I made $8 an hour.
That's so cool of them. So cool.
Yeah, Clear Channel fucking rules, dude.
Hey, how can we not give this person health insurance?
And they were like, yeah, you're here so much and we can't pay you. And I just like wanted to be on the radio, so I did it. But then I had another job, and I was a social worker I was like a caseworker for learning disabled people at the exact same time. So I would like, every day I would wake up at 8, I would pound coffee. I had individual clients that I worked through a private company, but they were state funded, and these like high functioning learning disabled clients who needed help like getting groceries or balancing their checkbook or something.
Or sign on to Facebook to talk about how much they love Burger King.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. God, I wish I got to work with him.
Yeah.
God, I love that man.
I hope that fucking owns a Burger King.
You know what's funny, too? Man, on this exact same line of thinking, I had a client. Her name was Josephine Jones, man. And she was so much fun. And she was like a woman in her 50s, high-functioning, learning-disabled, but not like in the sense that she led her own life, but not as much as that dude from Burger King. I don't think that she could have held down a job. But she had both a husband and a kid who were learning disabled. And so here was what, so the way that my job worked was there was state funding allotted for each of these clients because they were on Social Security, food stamps, stuff like that, and they had to, like, so their life had to be managed a little in the government's eyes to justify the funding they were getting. And so I had specific, like, in the world, real life responsibilities with these people. Some people I had to help them apply for jobs, some their finances, some go to get their prescriptions, stuff like that. But Josephine, it was just grocery shopping. It was grocery shopping for a very specific reason. It was because she had WIC money and food stamps and something else I'm forgetting that was allotted all for food and stuff. And literally, if I didn't go with her, once a week, she would go to the grocery store and buy $400 worth of fried chicken. And, like,
fried chicken doesn't keep.
She's, yeah, it doesn't keep. But the thing is that she's not wrong. Like, she's wrong in the sense that you have a kid and, like, you'll die.
Right.
But she would be like, "What are you?" Every week, she'd be like, "Why are you sure I can't get more fried chicken?"
Yeah.
And I would be like, "You can't, but I get it."
maybe you're right.
Like, the fact that, I don't know, dude, it's just like such an id way to leave. I just really love that.
No, I admire it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you're doing that. You start stand up in Fresno?
Yeah. I was 23.
Fresno is, I just drove up and did some shows in north of the Bay, and I stopped. I was so frat. A lot of things happened. Mm-hmm. My girlfriend's dog got a spine injury. We drove up. We've already talked about it. I drove her back. Drove to fucking Sonoma. Then realized dog's hurt. Drive her back. Then go back. And I'm so fried. That's so much driving,
dude.
That I stopped in Fresno at a McDonald's.
Yeah.
Scariest McDonald's I've ever.
Yeah,
been.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy came in without shirt and shoes.
Man, Fresno's a tough place.
Yeah,
it's intravenous drug use capital of the world.
Yeah,
at least it was for a while.
Well, the guy sold another. I saw a guy without a shirt on. He had a backpack. Came with backpack, no shirt. Sell someone working there drugs,
dude.
I was like, this is crazy.
I stayed in a Motel 6 on the outskirts of Fresno once, and I didn't sleep a wink. It, like I really didn't, dude. I and I worked at the rock station there. You know,
yeah.
Like so I had like direct access to the rednecks.
Mm-hmm.
We would, and a lot of that meant, a lot of the time that was really fun.
Right.
But then it also brought me in contact with meth heads and fucking
yes.
gangsters and shit. It sucked.
So you start stand up there. We'll start.
Oh, yeah. So I didn't really start. I tried it 5 times and I had such bad performance anxiety that I didn't. I like that was how that. The short version of the story is the afternoon DJ loved me and the morning show was leaving. And he had created a proposal for a new morning show at KRZR in Fresno that was going to be me and him. And he had been told by the Clear Channel higher-ups that this was happening.
And I'm going to be honest, you don't wear enough hockey jerseys to be a morning show DJ.
Dude, this is a direction my life could have taken.
Yeah.
And it seemed like it was happening. So I was excited about it. I'm 23, you know, driving my clients around Fresno, waiting for a phone call. And the phone call I got was, well, they fucked us, dude. And they syndicated Man Cow out of Chicago.
Well, at least they didn't say cheese or chocolate.
Yeah, no, dude.
He came in, gave you an honest answer right away.
And in hindsight, it was very much what I wanted.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like everything, thank goodness, later. You know? But at the
right.
time.
It was. I was banking on it. Yeah, I didn't want to be a fucking caseworker anymore.
Right.
And so that dude, his name is Rick Rodham. We're still friends. He had done stand-up a couple times. And then my buddy Boney Beasley, who is a rapper in town, who's a great rapper. He's in this great rap group called Argyle Pimps. And they had both done it. I was close to both of them. And so I did an open mic. Because I was like, fuck Clear Channel. They're a fucking terrible company. Also, radio's dying. I got to get the fuck out of here. And if I don't move out of Fresno, I'll get killed. So I was like, fuck all this. I'm going to try stand-up. I did it. Rick put on a show in Fresno. That was good. I did a mic. That sucked. I came down to LA and did 3 mics, and it was so terrifying that I was like, I'm never doing this again. And I moved back to LA because I was like, fuck Fresno. having secretly fallen in love with stand-up, but I was too afraid to actually do it. And I was a web designer and a drunk for 3 years until I got tricked into doing a show by my friend Julie. Well, bullied into doing a show by my friend Julie Cohen, and then I started stand-up.
Nice.
And I was 26. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. And then how did you start
Holy Fuck,
which was the just... I got represented from doing Holy Fuck.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know what's happened. When you record outside, crazy things happen.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, totally.
So how did Holy Fuck start?
Dude, actually, man, every question you ask me, we've been talking a long time, but every question you ask me has such a long answer. I'm gonna try to do it briefly.
No,
well, still,
people are not working right now. Listen, they don't care. They're like, oh no, how dare another interesting story.
Right, it's a podcast.
Yeah,
I'm forgetting.
Yeah, we don't have.
I'm just a talker, man. I just talk.
I mean, it's great.
Have you noticed that?
It's so nice.
Thank you.
I barely have had to cut you off because normally I'm just cutting people off.
Sure,
you know, a great interviewer.
Well, yeah. So, Holy Fuck happened actually for a very specific reason. And you might have even been to this place. One of my best friends. We're still friends. He actually runs a fucking keto restaurant in Eagle Rock now called Plants and Animals. That's really, really good. But he and two of his buddies, they signed a 4-year lease on an art gallery at 8th and Broadway. They were like, we're in our 20s. We want to do something cool. And then they very immediately realized that paying the rent on an art gallery is impossible. And
well,
it's
whenever I do stand up downtown in an art gallery, I'm like, this should be called Dad's Money.
Right. How
like,
the fuck did this happen?
No one is making a dollar off of this.
Yeah.
What trust fund is putting this together?
And this art gallery was fucking huge, dude. It was huge. And so they pretty quickly turned it to an illegal after-hours speakeasy called The Landing Party. So every Thursday, Friday, and honestly, dude, we're talking like I have now moved back to L.A. and I have nothing going on except I drink, and I haven't admitted to myself I want to really try stand-up. So I'm in like I'm just in the party part of my 20s with nothing else happening.
Right.
And my best friends run an after hours. So like Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night from 1 a.m. to 7 a.m., there's this – and it was like – it was fucking – intense, dude.
Go to this place, the Overpass?
I never ended up going.
So the,
but
so
I knew it was like
similar.
That.
Seems
yeah.
similar. To the Overpass was is the original Overpass was never was just you know 1 a.m. opened, 7 a.m. closed, and I could walk there from my house, and that's a bad
wow.
combo.
No shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of waking up at 4 p.m. for Brooks and that.
I used to have a joke about it. You ever see the sunrise not on purpose? You ever get surprised? Oh, yeah,
oh.
No.
Right. And your night's like not even near done.
Yeah. It's
yeah,
like a lot of walking home while people are jogging.
Right.
Yeah,
yes.
Terrible. You feel so scummy.
So these are like, I'm there all the time. And it's an after hours to the point of like when it started, there was like a little slot in the door and it would open and you would say the password that you got through the mailing list. You had to like have a friend of a friend get you on, right?
And then it just turned into a bar.
Well, no. Actually, then they got busted by Vice cops and it got more intense. So they would give you an address. They would email out an address and you would go to the address and it was a street corner and there was a dude playing guitar and he would sing the password to you. And the address, and then you would have to walk 2 blocks to the place.
Sounds pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, it was dope.
Yeah,
but then, by that time, the place had gotten so fucking popular. Like, they had bands playing at 5 in the morning, you know?
Yeah.
It got so popular, people were like, I remember the last time I went. Luckily, I wasn't there when they got busted the second time, because it was fucked up. Like, one of my friends went to jail. But
dude.
But there were so many people at this after hours that there was a bacon-wrapped hot dog salesman on the fucking street. Like, the cops were going to find them.
I remember Eagles of Death Metal played the Overpass.
What?
Like, yeah.
That's
yeah.
crazy.
And I'm just like, well, we're going to get busted.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they did.
Dude, a guy dropped a bag of Coke, like, in front of me in line to get in. And, like, there was just a big line. We had to pay a cover. Everyone's yelling and screaming.
Yeah.
I go in there.
All right.
And
So this is all happening.
So they get busted because of all that, and they have a 4-year lease. And I have been running this open mic. I am now 3 months into stand-up. Mm-hmm. I've been running an open mic with my friend Julie. And Julie has a monthly at their place. And her monthly show was called Where's the 101? And that show was how I first saw Kyle Kinane, Matt Bronger, Eddie Pepitone, like that entire Maria Bamford, Natasha Leggero, Nick Kroll. All these people had done that show, and it was my introduction into LA alternative comedy, and I loved it. I loved all of it. I loved everything about I went to Tiger Lily every fucking week.
I mean, Tiger Lily is the most special place in my heart.
Yes. The first time I got to do it, I don't think a thing I've gotten since has made me feel as accomplished.
Yeah, and if you're a comedian, I will. Here's how I got in there. Offer to host. Nobody wants to host.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're new, I'll host.
Yeah.
And then guess what? You meet everybody.
I had a booker tell me that the other day.
Hosting.
Yeah.
You eat shit.
You
don't
shit.
Do good, but everyone sees you as a comic.
Right.
Yeah.
And you get to work the club, and they know. Dude,
I'm talking about Tiger Lily. I just host.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because Tiger Lily is like a 3-hour show. No one wanted to host. Tiger Lily was like 30 comics.
I remember you hosting that show, that fucking marathon.
All the time. Loved hosting Tiger Lily. I loved it because you would bring up Galifianakis.
Right, yeah.
You would bring up fucking Maria. Like, and then you're like, you're my heroes.
Totally.
This is so cool.
That show was also magical in some extra way. And I don't know.
It's because of the kitchen. We all hung out in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah. But like the acts, too. Like, I remember how many times did you get to see Rory Scovel and John Doerr? If it weren't for that show, and those were, I'm just going to say it, the funniest things I've ever seen.
Dude,
ever.
One of the funniest sets I've ever seen was Howard Kramer said, we're just doing stand-up. It's not enough. We need to multitask. And he brought a blender and made a smoothie during his set. And then the whole crowd had some of Howard's smoothie.
Dude, John Doerr did a set once where he got introduced and no one came on stage. And then Lynn Shawcroft, who he was dating at the time, maybe still is, walks on stage and goes, and the whole back wall of the stage, there was a window, you know?
Yep.
And she goes, hey, everybody, I'm John's sponsor, and he fell off the wagon. It's been bad, and so he doesn't really feel like he should come into a bar, but he was booked on the show.
I remember. I was at the show. Oh, yeah. He did the show from outside.
Yeah. She was like, we figured out how to do it. Everybody give it up for John Doerr, and then in front of the window holding a mic, he showed up, and he just did a bunch of outdoors puns, and then someone started honking their horn, and it was Rory, and they got in a fist fight, and there were blood packs. There was a bloody handprint.
Yeah, dude. And this is all for like 30 people.
Totally.
God damn. It makes me mad that I bombed so hard last night at Rafa's.
Well, plenty of people bombed at Tiger Lily, man.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. Okay, all right. So
because of all that.
We're in this, like, fun moment, 2009.
2009, exactly. It was exactly 2009, and I'm 3 months into comedy, and my buddies have a 4-year lease on a business where they cannot do the only thing that ever made them money, which was have an illegal fucking after hours. And so they just begged me, along with a lot of their friends, they were like, please do a regular event here. Please, God, we just need, even if it's $100 that we make, we need money. And so I was like, I'll do a show here if I can also run a mic. And they were like, yeah, sure. So the mic was going to be every Monday. The show was going to be every other Tuesday. And like I said, you got to keep in mind, I'm 3 months into comedy. The first two people I reached out to do the show were Matt Bronger and Kyle Kinane.
Yep.
They both said yes. And Kyle Kinane was like, I can't do it. I can't do that first one, but any show called Holy Fuck, I'll for sure do. He said something like that in the Facebook message. It was called
Holy Fuck?
It was called, my original idea was because I loved them so much and I thought no one knew who they were, so it was going to be called Holy Fuck, It's Matt Bronger. And I was going to like feature these comedians.
Oh, yeah,
and then very quickly I was like, that's lame. That sucks.
Yeah,
let's call it
idea.
Holy Fuck. So I booked the first one. The headliner of the first one was Matt Bronger, and then we did the open mic. And during the first open mic, John Vargas was on stage when this happened. A tiny, tiny old Armenian man walked in and started screaming that they were evicted. And and I was like, okay, I guess the mic is over. And they got evicted while I was there. And 1 week later was the first Holy Fuck. And I didn't have a venue. And literally, this is why Holy Fuck was a show. Because we lost the venue. And I just felt like it would be wrong to let Matt Bronger down. And like, well, and now that I know Matt, obviously, like, I care about his feelings, but I know that he wouldn't give a fuck. He would be like, "Oh, you lost your venue. That's sad."
Oh yeah, I don't. He's just don't, a. Oh, person. You mean I don't have to do a Tuesday?
Yeah,
a Tuesday. Oh,
but
Tuesday.
To me, back then, you know, those guys were fucking heroes. So yeah. I was like, I can't. It would be the shitty. I can't be the type of piece of shit that just takes a show away from Matt Bronger. What kind of person am I? You know. Right. And so I like rant for like days. I went into every art gallery in L.A. And the whole time, that my buddy who got arrested when Vice cops busted their after hours, he worked at the Downtown Independent, this movie theater. It was a 250-seat movie theater, single screen that was beautiful. And he was like, "We can just do it here." And he kept saying it. And I was like, "No, that's fucking, it's way too big. You can't have a fucking comedy show at a movie theater. That's right. Fucking stupid. It'll be the worst." And he was like, "Okay, dude, well, we can do it." And no art gallery would agree to do my show. So in a panic, I was like, "Sure, we should try one."
Yeah. And then they ended up.
And then it became like.
I mean, it was the shit. Like,
it was the best.
Most of them sold out, didn't they?
No. No.
They didn't?
You know what's funny is that was the reputation it had.
My memory is they all sold out.
Dude, it was funny. Like, no one. Yeah. I mean, look, it was great.
It was
and
a
even
hang,
when
man.
It was light, the crowd. It was still great because we would like funnel everyone into the front. And so it was fine. But dude, like the fourth to last show, only 30 people came to.
Yeah.
So it wasn't easy to fill up the room, but it was still. I'll also say this, man. I do remember it as a good hang too. And you know, obviously things change and you move on and people grow up and move away and become headliners and get writing jobs and all this shit. And that's going to make people not hang out as much. But I will say this, even though that's all true, the way that Holy Fuck was a hang, I just haven't experienced since. And I mean, that's not totally true. A lot of other shows at the time were a hang. And this is what I'm trying to say. The Holy Fuck ended in 2013. And then that vibe was still there for a few years. Mm. And then something happened where now, and it's not just like, it's not because of the way shows are or there's no show where it's possible. The culture of stand-up now is just like comedians at large are not hungry to be doing comedy. And I don't know what it is, man. Because then, like, dude, fucking Kinane, Steve Agee, Maria, fucking, they would not, those people would just come sit in the lobby. I remember sometimes someone would not show up. One time, I walked downstairs, Paul Danke, Cornell Reed, maybe you, like six comedians. And I was like, "Guys, I don't know how to say this. I don't want to pick. I just have to do it this way. I got 8 minutes. Who wants it?" And Danke goes, "Me, fuck you guys." And I was like, "Paul's got it."
Yeah.
And everyone was like, "Fuck." Like, everyone was desperate
also
to do
it. Also, we're old
it.
Now, you know, so we're older. I mean, I don't want to be like, this new generation sucks. I also feel that the pendulum, when we started in L.A. in 2009, was so far alternative comedy. I loved it.
Yeah, me too.
And, like, the comedy clubs were kind of dead.
Yeah.
And I feel like it has swung to comedy clubs are the god right now. And I'm like.
So maybe that feeling is there.
So maybe the feeling is at the comedy store, which we decided we don't hang out at.
You know what, though? Post-pandemic, I've started going to Kick It at the Improv in the store.
Well, I love the Improv.
And it's great.
Yeah. No, that's just it. I'm like, there are hangs. It's just like no longer in a kitchen on Sunset. Now it's at the comedy store, which, you know. Good on them. Great job, Adam. He fucking rebooted it.
Yeah.
Okay. So then we got to get out of here. So you then have the sketch group with the women, which also, holy fuck's great. Uh-huh. You have a sketch show. You sell it to IFC. Things are crazy. They're good. Uh-huh. What was the moment? And then we're going to bounce. But I'm going to ask you five questions on the Patreon. So hold on. That you felt like you had made the right decision to do comedy.
Oh, man. It was way, 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 way early on.
Yep.
It was like I told you, when I was 23, I did it five or six times, and it was terrifying, and I all secretly wanted to. So what happened when I actually started was, I said my friend Julie bullied me. She had an open mic that she ran. She fired her co-host. She knew that secretly I'd always wanted to do it again, and I just always made it. She would ask me to do a mic once every few months, and I would always make up an excuse. So she, like, basically was like, quit being a fucking coward and just host this mic with me. You don't have to do anything else. Right. And I agreed. And I did. All I had to do was host the mic. And so I would try to be funny here and there, but really I would just bring people on and off. And I did that for a few months. And then in August of 2009, do you remember Alan Lebetkin? Remember him? He ran the open mic list for a while.
I didn't fuck with open mics when I got here because I moved from Chicago. And I was like, these aren't good.
Yeah, they're not. They're not.
Yeah, Chicago open mics rock.
Well, Alan was a guy who was around who ran some shows and mics and had this open mic list. And so he knew me because he came to the mic. And Julie called me and was like, Alan is booking a new show in Fullerton. He wants to have you on it. And I was like, I don't have any jokes. I've just been hosting them. I don't know. I can't. And I made up a bunch of excuses like I always had. And she was like, okay. And she G-chatted me while I was at work and was like.
What? I think that alternative comedy blowing up 2009 and G-chat all belonged together.
Yeah. Totally. We were all on G-chat together all day.
I found out I didn't get Montreal over G-chat. You know what I mean? I've got a lot of news over G-chat. I told someone I got SNL on G-chat.
Wow.
Yeah, I was like, dude, I just got SNL. I'm still at my job. All right, sorry.
Yeah, G-chat was a big part of my life.
Dude, G-chat because it was nothing but us comics with day jobs.
Dude, I also, yes. And I remember Jake Weissman, who you brought up before, I told him once, this is like, people do this with Twitter now. I was like, hey, man, I'm going off G-chat because it's making me not hang out with people in person. That's what I told him that.
Incredible.
And he was like, what?
Oh, man, I G-chat it with the best of them. Yeah. Mike Burns, my old roommate, got fired over telling me about how he stole from his job on G-chat.
What?
Yeah, and they had like set up security because they know, and they've caught him. Yeah, G-chat got Burns fired.
Jesus
Christ. Because
he
stole me some boots. Okay, so go on. I'm sorry.
So she, after me, like, desperately being like, I don't want to do the show. I don't have jokes. I can't do it. I'm not a comedian, whatever. She G-chats me, and she's like, yeah, I just told him you're doing it, so you have to do the show. It's in 2 weeks. Here's the date. You're on the fucking show. Sorry, Dave. And I was like, fuck. So she, like, cornered me into becoming a comedian.
But she gave you two week lead up, so you have time to, like...
And so I went to the mic at Westwood Brewing Company that was hosted by Vance Sanders and Robert Yasumura. It was my first mic, except for the one.
Both very funny dudes.
Totally. It was the first mic I'd done that wasn't my own. And what happened was awesome, dude. I can't stress enough. Like, I was so afraid and stressed when I did it in 2006 that I would cry after my sets. I would panic for days. I was like... It was awful. My anxiety was awful. I went up at Bruco and I bombed miserably. But having hosted the mic, I guess had eased my anxiety just a little bit, just enough to let me know it's okay. So I was still panicky. I was still scared. I still bombed. But after my set, I was standing there and I was like, oh, I want to do this every day.
Hell yeah.
And that was when I was just in. I knew I loved it. That day at that mic, I knew I was gonna do stand up forever, and I knew I loved it.
Awesome.
Yeah,
cool. I had the same first open mic I ever did. I got off and asked, "Can I work here?"
Whoa!
Yeah, I need to be here.
Cool. And it was Burger King.
It was Burger King. And I'll tell you what, that new Whopper's coming back, baby. Dave, I know that do you have anything to plug real quick?
Oh yeah, man. My podcast. I'll
put a link in this episode description. What's it about? Give us a pitch.
It's called What's It Called? It's me and Caleb Sinan, and we don't know what our podcast is called.
All right, well, tune in.
It's just two comedians.
If you liked what you
heard
today, you got more of it over there.
It's no concept at all. It's two comedians fucking around. If you like me, you'll like it.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, clearly this is a Jobs podcast. We talked for 1 second about Burger King. Well, and I also, here's the other thing that is so nice about you and our friendship is you are a huge fan of this podcast.
Yeah.
And you're always texting me. Like, it comes out Monday at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
4:05, I get a text from you every Monday.
Where's the Patreon episode? I don't pay you $100 a month to have to wait 65 minutes for my fucking Patreon episode.
Well, I was going to say, most of you text, no notes. Another perfect episode.
Well.
But then you also
But it's also late.
You also argue over my Patreon. I'm like, Dave, you don't have to pay $100 a month.
Yeah.
It's five. But so you clearly know, because you've listened to all these episodes, that I always have my guests take us out of the episode. So go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Entry Level. I'm Brooks Whelan.